You are listening to a free podcast of The Majority Report with Sam Cedar. To support the show and receive nearly an hour extra material daily, become a member today at majority.fm. Resistance is futile.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
The destiny of America is always safer in the hands of the people than in the conference rooms of any elite.
Sam Cedar.
They are unanimous in their hate for me, and I welcome their hatred.
We must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
If I get the feeling you've been cheated.
It is Thursday, January 5th, 2012. My name is Sam Cedar. This is the award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live in the literal, though not metaphorical, shadow, the New York Times building in the fashionable Dollar Lunch District of New York City. Today on the show, Jeff Smith, Occupy Wall Street media team. Updates on occupies across the country. President Obama making recess appointments not only to the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, as we discussed yesterday, but also to the National Labor Relations Board. 14-year-old deported to Colombia. Unfortunately, she was not from Colombia, nor did she speak Spanish. But we're getting those dirty immigrants out of this country, folks. SOPA on the docket. And a Montana Supreme Court, we mentioned it yesterday, we'll talk about it more today, says, yes, we can ban corporations from donating to our elections. That and more today on the program, ladies and gentlemen. Yesterday I was on the Young Turks with Cenk Uygur. Tonight I will be on CNBC with Larry Kudlow. You know, it's so hard not to talk about the primary elections because they're so fun. But we will endeavor, like I said yesterday, to bring you other news of more relevance. We'll still cover, obviously, the election. We'll get to that. We may also play today is just because we don't know how long Rick Santorum will be around. Some phone calls I made to his senatorial offices back in the salad days of the old Majority Report, back when I was more immature, I would make such calls. We got to do that again, but you know what we need first in here is phone line. Based on some comments he had made about Boston and the reasons why at that time he perceived the only Catholic Church priest scandal was happening in Boston, and he had specific reasons why. But we'll get to that in just a moment. Let's talk about these recess appointments because they're relevant. Their relevance can be overstated, I think, in a political sense. But are we seeing a is this evidence of a new Obama? Not really. Is it a good thing? Yes. You know, folks, this is what's difficult about this day and age for those of us who are leftists or liberals or progressives, is being able to chew and walk at the same time. Chew gum, I should say. Or really chew anything and walk at the same time. And that is, one can be extremely dissatisfied with President Obama, but also realize that one doesn't necessarily have other viable options from electoral sense. And so you have to look at the decent things that we get out of an Obama administration with open eyes. And also continue to critique the Obama administration when they fall short of our expectations. And so, you know, and I take the same tack basically for just about the rest of the candidates. I mean, I don't think there's really anything useful about the Republicans. And I'm certainly open to the idea that a Republican administration in 2012 would bring about the type of progressive change that we want in 2016 or any other time for that matter, because it shouldn't just be pegged towards the presidential elections. However, I just don't buy that argument. I see the value of a Ron Paul introducing certain ideas onto the debate stage, both literally and metaphorically speaking. I don't think he's the best representative of these ideas. And I think, in fact, the core of his ideas are not helpful at all. But that doesn't mean that I don't see any value in his being engaged in this process. And so I can actually hold those two beliefs simultaneously, which apparently in some quarters is considered verboten. Which I believe is German for God bless you. Oh, no, I mean, that's Gesundheit. So let's get into it. President Obama, like I said, made two sets of appointments yesterday. Recess appointments. And there's a couple of issues involved in this. One is that the Senate, like I said yesterday, has been in a pro forma session. In other words, they send in one dude or lady to bang on the gavel and pretend like they're still in session, but they don't do any work. Well, the president's attorneys have determined that that's actually not really being in session. And that's not an unprecedented opinion by the attorneys. The Bush attorneys had the same opinion. Understand that President Obama has made, on average, 9 recess appointments a year, which is the smallest amount of recess appointments in Matt's lifetime. Matt, what was the first president that you experienced?
I really have no clue. I was born in 86, so I'm not sure.
I don't know what is more disturbing about what you just said, the fact that you were born in 1986 or the fact that you had don't know who was president in 1986?
Well, I'm trying to think right now. Wasn't it Jimmy Carter?
No? Oh, my God.
No?
Oh, my God.
No?
You know what? That woman is right.
What?
It was Ronald Reagan.
Ronald Reagan?
Yeah.
I'm so tired today, man. You have no clue.
Yeah, you seem tired. All I know is that Matt came in and said, yeah, I got a response from the Occupy New Hampshire people at 3 a.m. So I don't know what you were doing up at 3 a.m. We had a member quit because she didn't like Matt talking. And so she quit. And I've told her that I'm going to dock Matt 2 members' worth of pay a month so that I actually benefit out of her quitting. And I may, just to torture her on the free show, Matt may host the whole thing today, if you weren't so sleepy. So President Obama has done about 9 recess appointees each year he's been in office. George Bush did about 22 recess appointments a year while he was in office. So this is certainly not something that President Obama has done, frankly, in my opinion, enough. And his attorneys have determined that the pro forma session is, in fact, not a session. If they're not coming into work, then they cannot confirm nominees. And the president has taken a fairly narrow view of this. In other words, the only nominees, despite the fact that you have literally dozens of positions that need to be confirmed, positions on the board of the Fed, positions at the FDIC, positions, regulatory positions at the OCC. The president did not make any of those appointments. The president only made appointments to the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, which cannot function without a director. Statutorily speaking, the statute has been passed. The entity has been created. It cannot function, according to statute, without a director. And so President Obama was compelled, for the functioning of this body, to appoint someone, to recess appoint someone. The same is true with the National Labor Relations Board. In 2010, the Supreme Court of the United States determined that the National Labor Relations Board cannot function without a quorum of three people. Because Craig Becker, the last recess appointee, understand, what the Republicans are doing is they're trying to debilitate these two bodies. And instead of going back and attempting to overturn the elements of the Dodd-Frank bill that created the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, and instead of going back and attempting to overturn the National Labor Relations Act, which has been around for almost 100 years, they just wanted to basically make these boards dysfunctional by obstructing anyone who may be appointed to them. So the Supreme Court determined the National Labor Relations Board cannot function without a quorum of three people. And with Craig Becker leaving, his term being up, that would have brought the number of National Labor Relations Board directors to two, making the board completely dysfunctional. And I'm not talking figuratively. I'm saying it would not be able to do anything. So the president appointed three people tomorrow to fill up the board with five commissioners. One of the Republican commissioners on the board, as it is now, has threatened to quit. So President Obama appointed three people to make sure that if that guy did quit, you'd still have quorum. So that is what is going on. That is why President Obama has made these recess appointments as opposed to any others. The 11th Circuit, back in 2004, ruled that the amount of time that the Senate is in recess is irrelevant as to the president's ability to appoint. There has been no, as far as I know, court case involving this notion of a pro forma session. It is possible and likely we're going to see litigation by the first party that is subject to the ruling of one of these two entities. In other words, the Chamber of Commerce, which hates the National Labor Relations Board, because what the National Labor Relations Board does is protect the rights of workers and upholds the National Labor Act. So the Chamber of Commerce, because many of its members are subject to rulings from the National Labor Relations Board, will probably sue after the first ruling that involves any one of their members by the National Labor Relations Board. So it remains to be seen what will happen. You should also know that the past three Republican presidents made recess appointments to the National Labor Relations Board. St. Ronald Reagan, president from 1980 to 1988. Matt's confirming that for me. And George Herbert Walker Bush each made three recess appointments to the NLRB. George W. Bush made seven such appointments. Now, understand, too, the difference between George Bush making these recess appointments is because he wanted to avoid the confirmation process totally because of the industry hacks he was filling this board with. President Obama, sadly, has no such disposition to do so. It's only that the Republicans have publicly stated, we're not going to appoint, we're not going to confirm anybody. You could put the president, you could put Jamie Dimon, the chairman of Chase, up for confirmation for the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. We still won't confirm him. We don't want it to exist. They're trying to nullify the law. So what will Rich Cordray do? Who is he? We've talked about him in the past. He was our second choice after Elizabeth Warren. He worked at the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau under Elizabeth Warren as they were setting it up. It had no authority to actually enforce the regulations scheme that they were setting up. But they did all the pre-planning. Cordray was Attorney General of Ohio. He pursued lawsuits against the country's biggest financial firms, according to Susie Kim in the Washington Post, including AIG, Bank of America, and Fannie Mae, for lying to the state's pension funds. Got a $700 million settlement from AIG over the accounting fraud. God, what a cesspool that company is, isn't it? He's also gone after the foreclosure mills where where there are robo-signers. Sued Ally Financial in 2010. The Consumer Financial Protection Bureau is funded and located inside the Federal Reserve. It will consolidate oversight over consumer financial products like loans, I think not student loans, but car loans, credit cards, mortgages. There was regulations that supposedly oversaw these things, but it was in like seven different agencies. The agency's purpose, stated purpose, is to address unfair, deceptive, abusive practices by payday lenders. Oh, it is private student loan lenders, debt collectors, and other non-bank lenders, including certain mortgage originators and servicers. It also has the responsibility of overseeing all banks with deposits over $10 billion that provide such loaning services. Now, so you can see why. I mean, it's sort of stunning that the Republicans have been obstructing the progress of this regulatory agency. And it's also sort of stunning that up until now, the Democrats have made such little hay out of it. But it is a hot potato, at the very least, for Scott Brown in Massachusetts, the premier mass hole in the country. It's one of the top mass hole officials, being a senator from Massachusetts, and dude drives a pickup, and very proud of his hot daughters, apparently. Didn't he come out and say stuff like, didn't he say something like really sort of creepy about his daughters like that?
I think so, yeah.
I mean, you know, look, as a father of a daughter, I, you know, I can, you don't see it as creepy when you're a dad. But well, I mean, I'm not saying my daughter's hot because she's six. But
I don't think a father should ever, whether their child is 6, 20, 50, call their daughter the word hot.
You know what? I would have thought the same thing before I was a dad. But it's not, I could definitely perceive, I mean, I don't use that word that much. Unless it's like literally about something that's hot. Like where you could get burned. But, you know, it's not as strange to me. But be that as it may. I wouldn't pose naked. He also posed naked, but I wouldn't do that. But that's more really about my own perception of my body type. And I think it's actually a legitimate perception, frankly. But so Scott Brown running against Elizabeth Warren, he's actually had to come out and praise President Obama for recess appointing Cordray. That's what's happening in the country now. Because he's running against Elizabeth Warren and he's in that much trouble that he's actually got to come out and praise. Remember, he was the Tea Party darling because he had a pickup truck. Do you understand how just really sort of just fundamentally, how can I put this, intellectually challenged the Tea Party members are? That they have no policy. You understand that, folks, right? They've never had any policy. Maybe they want some more theocracy. Then maybe there was a couple of people at the beginning who, you know, branded themselves that because they didn't like TARP or whatever it was. But at the end of the day, any major Republican movement, conservative movement, really just has to do with they think they are pissing off liberals. That's it. Yeah, in Massachusetts, they're going to have a Republican who drives a pickup truck. Yeah, you don't know anything about Massachusetts. The National Labor Relations Board appointments. A union lawyer, Richard Griffin. A current Labor Department official, Sharon Block. And National Labor Relations Board counsel, Terrence Flynn. I believe Terrence Flynn is a Republican. This is pretty amazing. When you think about what the Republicans and what businesses are pissed about, businesses have been enraged that the National Labor Relations Board made a rule that would require employers to hang posters in the workplace informing their workers of their collective bargaining rights. Much like the Department of Labor placards already found in American workplaces, business groups have sued to stop the new National Labor Relations Board rule. Understand what this is. All the National Labor Relations Board is requiring is that a notice of existing rights that workers have be put up in the workplace, probably in the cafeteria, on the bulletin board, wherever. You can put it up wherever you want. You could probably put it on the whatever color paper you want. Just as long as it's legible. And they are being sued because of this. When I worked at Bartley's Burgers in Harvard Square 20 years ago, Mr. B put up an article in the in the waiter station about the recession that was taking place at that time. And it was a story, I think, from like the local Cambridge paper that said something like, local workers are happy to have jobs during this recession. It was just a way to remind us. And so I put up a poster underneath it that said, based upon the economic situation locally, if you think it's a good idea that we unionize, please contact me. He wasn't too thrilled with that. I was shortly fired after that. It was a joke. The Labor Board has also issued new rules that will speed up the union election procedures And, of course, this pisses off conservatives and business, because what they like to do is have enough time between the time that it's announced there's going to be a vote to see if workers want to unionize to intimidate their workers and re-educate them to the value of having no collective bargaining. So that's that. Interesting. I wouldn't read too much into it as to President Obama has now become some type of champion of good government, but at least he's doing something. Meanwhile, in more important, perhaps more important doings across the country, Occupy Rapid City in South Dakota did something that was pretty interesting. They went to City Hall to basically petition the city council as individuals. They went up one at a time. You're allowed to speak in these city council meetings. And basically asked the city council to limit the where the city deposits its money to locally owned banks. The council passed a motion to create a committee to review the criteria for choosing institutions on their list of where they deposit money. It may or may not go through, but it was an interesting proposal, something that you can do with your own local occupies around the country. You know, I think we'll talk to Jeff Smith in a couple of minutes here about what Occupy is up to, at least locally. But, I think the key is to stay active in any means in which they can. And this is a great idea. Apparently, the local television station covered the meeting but didn't mention that it was the Occupy movement that raised the banking thing. But meanwhile, the Republican primary will be moving to New Hampshire next week, right? It's next Tuesday. What's that, the 10th or the 11th? Occupy New Hampshire is inviting people to come up and occupy the presidential primary. They are taking actions from January 6th to January 10th. You can go to occupynh.org to get more information. We'll have somebody, will update us on what Occupy New Hampshire is doing on the 10th. Meanwhile, Occupy DC, Kevin Zeese has put out a report on what Occupy DC intends to be doing. He says the Occupy movement needs to build on four strong components: nonviolent protest and civil resistance, non-participation in the existing corporate finance-dominated economy, the development of concrete plans and policies to transform the corporate economy into a people's economy, and ending government dominated by money by shifting political power to the American people. They have surveyed folks on Freedom Plaza, which is an encampment on Pennsylvania Avenue between the Congress, the Treasury, and the White House. And their four intentions, at least for the coming months, continue to hold Freedom Plaza, occupy the Peace House, which is essentially an encampment on the north side of the White House that's been there for 30 years protesting nuclear war. It was founded in 1981, and it's always been maintained, mostly by a guy named Concepcion Picciotto. So they will help occupy that that encampment. They're going to move into a house in Mount Rainier, which I believe is in Maryland. Is it in Maryland or Delaware? And
Maryland.
they're going to also maintain and build their web-based community. So that's what's happening with Occupy DC. Members of Occupy LA yesterday continued on with Occupy Our Homes. They're occupying a foreclosed South Central home of a 79-year-old retired school teacher who is fighting eviction as a result of Bank of America's God knows what they're doing. There's so many stories around the country of people paying their mortgage and getting foreclosed upon. She's owned her home since 1964. I am sure this is one of those situations where they said, hey, take out a second mortgage. You can find more at Occupy LA. 61 arrests with the final tally for Occupy Iowa caucuses. And there are people all across the country now involved in Occupy Our Homes. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll be talking to Jeff Smith.
To let me know, should I stay or should I go? If you say that you are mine, I'll be here till the end of time. So you've got to let me know, should I stay or should I go?
We are back. Sam Cedar on the Majority Report on the phone. Jeff Smith from Occupy Wall Street Media. You can find him on Twitter at Don't Be a Putz. You know, Jeff, we should do this as a regular thing.
Yeah, why don't we do it?
You know what? We will. And you know what? We should also, somebody should also make a theme song for Jeff. we'll talk about that. I'll ping you and we'll figure this out. But so give me an update. The other day, Occupy Wall Street heads to Grand Central Station to essentially do a mic check and inform people of the provision in the National Defense Authorization Act, which more or less allows, not really less, allows for the indefinite detention of citizens of the United States as well as non-citizens. With essentially no habeas corpus, no rights, nothing. You could just basically be disappeared. And what happened?
Yeah, no, you're exactly right, Sam. And it was something that was signed on New Year's Eve, not coincidentally, and pretty much disappeared into the Iowa caucus's, you know, news hole. And it was really important, and so we decided to stage an action first in front of the New York Public Library and then out in front of the senators' offices, Gillibrand and Schumer, who both voted for this thing. And then finally,
yeah, we should say that the Senate passed it by over 80 votes. It is a veto-proof majority, but I contend that that was because the Obama administration had sort of announced that they weren't going to veto it, and that sort of gave cover for a lot of people to vote for it.
Absolutely. And, you know, even with a veto-proof majority, if the president really has reservations, as he claimed, he could veto it and then put the pressure back on the senators to override that.
Correct.
And so it definitely seemed like it was backdoored in and that really everyone was complicit with it. And so we felt it was really important. And again, I think it points out the fact that, you know, Schumer and Gillibrand are both Democrats, and that, you know, Occupy Wall Street is not really about any party, and it's more about the issues. And so anytime any of our politicians kind of turn their back on the people, that's when you see Occupy Wall Street kind of step it up.
Now, for people who haven't been, so you went out in front of the library, you went to the offices of our two New York State senators. How did those protests go?
They went well. We definitely got to go to sort of a part of town. They were over on 3rd Avenue and 48th Street. And, they both share the same building, and you know, there were people that were walking by and that didn't know about the NDAA, and I think a lot of people didn't know what it was. I mean, I think it's sort of made obscure on purpose, even to call it the NDAA. What it really was is just sort of another step towards just taking away so many of our freedoms, this one being, I guess, the Sixth Amendment, the right to a trial. And, you know, one by one, they're picking off our First Amendment rights, it seems.
Yeah, it's pretty stunning. And this, of course, was an authority that the Bush administration claimed they had under the unitary executive theory. And I've mentioned this before, you know, when we had Charlie Savage on, he made it clear that President Obama was not necessarily more interested in civil liberties than the Bush administration, but they were more interested in the idea of the rule of law. And so now they've made it into law. They have really actually in many ways strengthened what many perceived was a rogue authority that the Bush administration claimed. And President Obama, of course, issued a signing statement, said, you know, I have this authority, but I won't use it. I don't think it's that important. But, of course, that really is sort of meaningless.
For sure. And I think it points to, you know, one of the really insidious things about having a Democrat in office is that a lot of the things that he's able to pass, I think, would have come under a lot more scrutiny had it been a Republican. And so I think for looking forward towards the next 4 years, where I imagine a lot of people like I do think that Obama will probably win, that makes Occupy roles, you know, even more important to continue to put the pressure on him and be really the only real voice of dissent at this point when we seem to have Democrats in charge of the Senate and the White House, at least.
Right. And I think it's also a function of it being a far more legitimate, well, legitimate may be the wrong word, but a more sincere dissent, one that is directed specifically at the issue at hand rather than just perceiving it as leverage for electoral gain.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And so to continue the day, after we left the offices of the senators, there was really no police action other than, I mean, they seem pretty familiar with people coming to a senator's office to protest. And the officer that I talked to was actually quite helpful. He was even the one that actually told us that Schumer had moved offices and now shared the same building as Gillibrand. So for a while, we were at the wrong address, just up the street. And from there, people went to Rockefeller Center, actually, briefly. And it got to the point where the police, I guess Rockefeller Center, made the decision that just everyone would have to leave, and that if that meant that tourists all had to be pushed out, they did that as well. So basically they just said no for everybody. That was the only way they could figure out a way to get Occupy people out. And,
so wait a second. Rockefeller Center, like wait, like downstairs, like the entire building? They cleared out the entire building?
Yes, downstairs. I mean, people went in and they had little ornamental tents that they had written, you know, pieces of paper with messages on them, and they were doing some mic check stuff. And so the police were really unable to tell who was, they couldn't, you know, say only protesters leave, and so they just decided to clear everyone out.
Wow. And those ornamental tents, I've seen it. Is that your artwork?
Yes. I didn't design the actual template of what we were doing, but I did produce a lot of the messages on those and spread a few around.
I thought you drew the tent.
No.
I was
going to
say,
else. You
got some skills. So,
So finally, the day wrapped up in Grand Central, and that definitely felt like sort of the riskiest move in a way, just because the rules are a little bit different. There's MTA police, and you've seen, you know, National Guard guys in there with AK-47s or whatever. So, you know, we called up the National Lawyers Guild just to make sure, and they were like, no, there's no real other rules. I mean, you're allowed to go in there and do whatever. And we figured since improv groups have gone in there and danced around, we weren't really doing something essentially worse than that. But there was a feeling, certainly, of tension when you were in Grand Central waiting to do this, and I think that's all the more important about what this NDAA Act says and the fact that just being in public dissenting and voicing your opinion about something that your government has done suddenly feels riskier. Suddenly feels like, you know, you're made to be a criminal. And I think that was kind of the point. And so I think we pushed that to a limit again. and tried to make that a story that more people are aware of.
Now, we'll put the video on the front page of Majority FM, but basically a woman, one of the Occupier protesters, started to do a mic check about the NDAA. And, you know, it's so quiet and serene in Grand Central Station. It's a place where people go. They go to just to quietly read and sit down and relax. And, you know, so the idea of someone basically doing a mic check there must be incredibly disruptive. Now, I'm being facetious, obviously. Grand Central Station is.
And actually, one of the things they did was, and it was certainly intentional, is that the announcements over the loudspeaker just became incessant, just continuous for just minutes and minutes and minutes. They were trying to definitely drown us out. And so the police began coming out there, and there was actually a couple of arrests preemptively before even the first mic check. So that clearly seemed like they knew the plan, which we, of course, were not keeping a secret, and tried to preempt us with some intimidation tactics. And then once people started shouting, eventually they did grab some of those people and arrest them. And I think they were...
They went after that woman extremely aggressively. And what's really stunning is that I want folks to think about this for a second. You're in Grand Central. It is a massive, massive, essentially train depot. And you are using the PA system to drown out other people. Like, what is the value of this? Like, what is behind this? This is what people have to start asking themselves, is what is behind this? You can see in the video, they're not preventing anybody from getting to their trains. They're not creating anything that could be could even be contemplated as some type of hazard, any type of danger involved in this. It clearly is the police just don't want people to get this message out. I don't think they haven't been sent word from the White House. I think it's just they want to silence these people. I mean, it's my assessment. Do you get accurate, Jeff?
Oh, I think that's totally what it's about. I mean, the kind of stuff that is allowed in New York City, whether it's various parades or you go to Union Square and you see a giant tent city of people selling stuff, and that's totally permissible. I mean, there was an art project in Central Park, if you remember, with the orange gates
mm-hmm.
that went on, you know, forever, the construction of it, and, you know, Bloomberg loves that. Anything he feels like that brings commerce or caters to, you know, his society of friends, then the city is his playground. But as soon as the message turns to something that he doesn't agree with, I think that he looks to shut it down. And I think this is clearly about the message.
Are there official policies that are posted or stated anywhere about what is permissible in Grand Central Station? In other words, I mean, was there some type of official? Why were these people arrested?
The charges, as far as I know, were disorderly conduct, which can be, you know, granted for raising your voice too loudly or blocking the stairs or some sort of reason that they probably would have to make up. But I guess the police just have a certain discretion that they're able to use. And even if they arrest you and charge you with something that's immediately thrown out in court, you've still been taken away in cuffs and processed through the system. And you know, it definitely points to a certain power that they have, and it's being used and wielded against us in a really sinister way, I got to say. I mean, it really feels like they're just targeting us to harass us, to make us stop and go home.
Right.
And I can tell you that it's just not going to work. It's just not, you know, I mean, if we were to give up for this reason, it would be almost feel like just giving up on our entire country to just say we're not going to talk anymore.
And so give me a sense of also, were you down New Year's? Were you in Liberty Square?
I was. New Year's was fantastic. It was funny because I think if you recall, the weather was rather balmy.
Yep.
And, you know, as you know, in New York, when the weather gets warmer, people come out and all of a sudden you start seeing much bigger crowds. And so I think that's definitely portends of what we're going to see come springtime. But there were probably, you know, 400 or 500 people in the park that night, which is as big a crowd as I can remember in Zuccotti in a really long time. And because the police were so focused towards Times Square, I think they found themselves a little bit overwhelmed. And what protesters did was is they started taking the gates, those barricades that everyone hates, and pulling them off the sides of the park and into the middle. And it got to the point where basically they couldn't barricade in the park anymore. They had to move them out towards the street, and there were big holes in them. And we sort of defeated them on that level. And then eventually they just got so angry that they decided to just come in and clear the entire park and start arresting people.
So now is the theory here that essentially maintain the movement both on an ad hoc basis as issues arise, like this National Defense Authorization Act, but also to maintain just some measure of activity until the spring, where, like you say, people tend to come out and get more involved in things?
Yeah, I think that's the way. I mean, I think there's also organization that's going on behind the scenes in terms of trying to make sure what happens in the spring will be even better better planned. But, yeah, for now, I think our real power is that people already know the sort of brand or name of Occupy Wall Street, and so that gives us an entree to actually voice a side of opinions that are not represented right now. And, you know, the mainstream media can sort of claim that we've been moved out and that we're no longer relevant, and yet somehow they still keep talking about us over and over again. So, you know, I think we want to keep using that. And coming up into the 17th, the first day of Congress, there's the Occupy Congress, which is, you know, in a lot of ways, everything's horizontal, so this is just sort of a group of people that have decided to put this together. But I think I'm going to be going down to D.C. for that, and I think it's just another opportunity to inject ourselves in a place where, you know, people like us don't normally get to voice an opinion.
All right, Jeff Smith, don't be a putz on Twitter. Thanks so much for joining us, and I'll be in touch. We'll figure out. We'll do this on a regular basis.
Okay. Thanks, Sam.
All right. Thank you, Jeff. All right, folks. That is the end of the lesser half of the program today. The better half of the program is coming up. It is available to members of the Majority Report at majority.fm. We need your memberships, folks. People are dropping like flies because Matt speaks on the microphone. And they're quitting because of Matt. Now, I can only dock him so much pay before he actually pays me when he comes in here. So if you can become a member, we need your support. It's the only way that we can do what we're going to do, what we do do, what we're going to do, all of it. You can support the show also by buying your junk. If you buy junk through Amazon, buy it through our link. You will notice no difference, but we get a tiny little kickback. Pennies per your purchase. But maybe that'll buy a new computer someday, or a new printer because our printer broke, or get Matt a scarf or something like that.
Something where I shut up.
We'll buy a muzzle for Matt. You can also purchase a fair trade coffee at justcoffee.coop. Coffee, tea, chocolate, you'll love it. See you in the better half. You can call me at 646-257-3920, 646-257-3920, or IM me at Majority FM, or Skype us at Majority Live. See you in the better half.